You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's Friday, the 18th day of July. On the phone line with us is Mike Zuzalow. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas. It's great to talk with you, Mike. Thanks
great
for being
to be with us.
With
you again, Todd. Thank you.
Well, tell me about this marketplace. Things have not been pretty, and there have been a lot of outside influences this week. Though I must admit, when I looked at the wheat, I was thinking, hey, it's a pretty rough down day, and we actually ended higher on the week in both the September and the July of next year contracts.
Yeah, the soft red wheat was able to close positive, hard red still kind of licking its wounds. But I think to wrap up the week, Todd, we started the week with the wheat trying to carve out a technical bottom, eager to see if we found a demand low in the market. Did not see that demand low in the exports, and we wrapped up the week turning more to the geopolitical side of the equation. You and I have talked about this since January, essentially, that there is really very little risk premium in the market built for the wheat and for the grains in lieu of what's going on in the Ukraine and Russia, that the market essentially has swept that under the rug, if you ask me. And so we went into a short-sighted, news cycle-driven market yesterday, bullish to the grains because of the geopolitics, bearish to equities. Today we did the exact flip. We saw wheat lead the corn to new contract lows while the S&P 500 pushed back towards its all-time highs. One thing to wrap up on the Ukraine and Russia is I think it is starting to come around that there's really no good answer here. Either Putin backs down and things calm down politically or militarily there between Russia and Ukraine. But at the same time, if that happens, then you're probably going to see increased economic sanctions led by Germany and the United States, slapped on Russia. That could open up and increase the possibility of a more of a Russian-type blockade of grain. So I think the trade may have to come back around and realize that Ukraine represents about 16%, 15 to 16% of the corn exports worldwide, and 5 to 6% of the wheat exports next week when we come back if these military tensions ease but the economic tensions increase.
Have you started to do the balance sheets and figure out a much larger U.S. crop and balance that against what might not be coming out of the Baltic or Black Sea area if this is truly the case and what it might mean over time?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a couple things on that question. That's a very, you know, big question to answer. I'll say this. The year-to-date commitments on wheat are down 27%. The year-to-date shipments are down 28%. Our demand, there's no question, is not there. We're not getting the business. So the next question is the business out there to be gotten? And it is. I totaled up between Turkey, Japan, Algeria, Iraq, and Israel this week. We had about 1.3 million tons of wheat tendered and purchased by those five countries. And so we're not getting the business right now because of our location or for whatever reason, whether it's political or whatever reason it may be. We're not getting the business right now. But if you would take Ukraine partially off the board, I think that opens up, and we've talked about this on several occasions, an upside potential of about a dollar in the wheat market, and that would give the corn, I think, about a 50-cent upside potential. And that would just be on trying to infuse back into the market the idea that the wheat is not just growing in off of the trees right now.
Turn your attention to the corn market. You mentioned contract lows. So let's see, September corn down to, what, $3.70 on its low. It was off 7 cents for the week. December corn was off 6 1/4, and its low for the week was at $3.77 1/2.
Yeah, good thing about corn is we found the demand. I mean, I think that's where the export inspections and also the export sales and the ethanol, weekly ethanol numbers, very, very strong in all three categories. So the price has sought out the demand by going lower. It found that demand. But it goes right back to the wheat market. You can't drill a low into the corn until you get a wheat low first, especially given the weather to date. Now, as we come back, recognizing that silking is about, I think it was 34% this past week, if the weather that looks hot and relatively warm and dry from Omaha to Indianapolis holds in there more than 5 or 6 days next week, I think the trade may have to come back and revisit this perfect crop mentality, led by the beans, I think, Todd, but I think the corn silking being down in the 30s this past Monday would suggest the same for corn to a lesser degree. I also would be watching very carefully to see if Monday's crop conditions report gives us our first decline of the season. One of the most bearish fundamental factors that started us off this week was that 1 point increase in the good to excellent conditions for corn. That seemed to give the market the idea that, hey, we're not losing conditions seasonally like we normally do. So it puts more in the responsibility for the wheat to make a bottom when you have things like that come up.
Seasonally, are we ready to do that, do you think? Because you've been pinning a lot here on wheat making a bottom, and then within, I'm assuming, about 3 weeks, corn bottoming after that and then bouncing back up.
Yes, that's right. In fact, we're running counter-seasonally lower right now in the wheat for 2 straight weeks at this stage.
All right. So do you think a bottom is on hand?
I think it's there to be had once the sentiment changes. I think, again, if you don't have the wheat come in and help the market, you could have a weather-related bottom led by the beans. We had terrific demand this week on old crop bean sales, terrific demand on new crop bean sales. Again, I think the clients are anecdotally telling me that they do not have, in a large range of the United States, a 15-year high in their conditions for beans right now. And, you know, 10, 15 days of warm, very dry weather is not going to do most of the bean belt much good. So this is where the crop conditions, and because the market looks at that as almost a scriptural type mindset, that it is the, you know, government, city hall, don't fight it. If you'd start to see that drop, Todd, I think then you'd start to see the market come off the bean negativity, and that 1060 level in November beans would be very good support.
Is the corn-bean ratio just out of whack?
It is. It's just out of whack because the spreading has been out of the whack. You know, we've seen really good demand in the old crop. The grain stocks report and the big excess new crop supplies put on the books from the report here in July, both those things have just taken the spread and torn it to shreds, essentially. But the cash market and the fundamentals would suggest the August beans are way too cheap compared to November, and therefore the November beans need to lose a little bit, probably to the December corn.
All right. So that was my next question, was which one has to move? Was it the corn or the beans? So you think November beans are overpriced at this time?
I do, from a standpoint of in relationship to the bean corn ratio, but I think you could see where the August jumps and the November stays pretty flat until it gets a better beat on the weather. I'm more in the mindset that the beans have a lot of support underneath them, given this weather, if it lasts more than 10 or 12 days.
Turn your attention to the livestock, feeder cattle, live cattle, lean hogs. What caught your attention?
The big thing that caught my attention was the live cattle and the feeder cattle really tried to fight back, even though box beef prices were dropping. I think you've got a real disappointing chart to end the week when it comes to the cattle market, and I think this is where next week you don't want to see hardly any slippage. I was talking to some of the Newswire people about the livestock this week, and they pointed out how the beef has been able to garner a little extra consumer demand, and I think that's true. We've had this El Nino summer. Hamburger has been beating out the pork and the poultry on the featuring side, but I think here again that's probably running a little long in the tooth at this stage. I'm real eager to get some hedges in cattle and hogs once I see the technical signals.
And do you think hogs then are due to move lower? Because I thought that they wouldn't be putting more hogs into the system or marketing them until, I don't know, late August, September, possibly into October.
No, I think you're right, and I think maybe we can hold up there for another 20, 30 days, but I think with only one more big summer grilling season, season holiday
right
left, and the fact that the September hogs and pigs report traditionally is not a very favorable report to the market, I think this is kind of your sweet spot to get hedges in. But I think you're right about the cash market. It's going to remain tight through September.
Yeah, so $127 kind of sideways through the end of the summer maybe or not?
Yeah, and I think what you look at those back-end markets and see how much premium they can build and say, okay, we factored in that big drop in supplies. You know, let's get some these hogs in place as far as hedges.
All right. Thank you so much.
Great to be with you, sir. Have a great weekend.
Good to be with you, too. That, of course, is Mike Zuzel. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting.